On today's Squadcast, you'll hear from George and Suzanne Fisher. George and Suzanne met here as counselors and went on to have several children who served here at Camp Susqua. Expect to hear about how they got connected with Camp Susqua, about some of George's exploits as a veritable science guy, and some classic Susqua stories as well. Thanks for joining us round the proverbial campfire today. Let's listen in. We are here with Chief George and Miss Suzanne Fisher. Chief George, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, and Miss Suzanne.
Doing well. Enjoying Susqua.
Joining us is our director, Chief Peter, as well.
Good morning, or afternoon, whenever you're listening to this.
That's right. So we are here during our chill winter camp 2024, and George, you have graciously agreed to be our chaplain for the weekend, even though you have said that you didn't think of yourself as a chaplain. So how's the experience been so far for you?
Well, it's been a kind of a stretch for me, but I really enjoy it. It's, you kind of put yourself in a situation where you can grow, and That's been fun. But yeah, my milieu is science shows. So it's way easier. Like an electron always does the same thing. But, you know, God is so far beyond us that being a chaplain is, who can do it, really?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to take advantage of our time to chat with you and ask, this is a common theme on the Squadcast here, going way back to the beginning, how did you first get involved in Camp Susqua?
Okay, when I was in college, I wanted to be a summer camp counselor. This was in Massachusetts. And there was a guy on my dorm floor, Jeff Goodman, and he had been a counselor at Camp Susqua the summer before and the summer before that. And he said, oh, you got to go to Camp Susqua. So that's how I started. And I wrote to Chief Bob, and he wrote back a lot. And just went from there.
Well, I'm also curious, Suzanne, how did you first come to Camp Susqua?
Oh, well, I think I've known about camp since I was at least in third or fourth grade, because my older brothers, as part of the youth group at our church, would come up to camp as a group back in the 1974. 75 or something like that. And I've always known about it. They'd always talk about how much fun they had and how much they enjoyed it. And it was kind of our church's sending camp. It was in Hackettstown, New Jersey.
So then how did you and George meet?
I'll go first. Well, there was something called counselor orientation. So Suzanne was a counselor before I was, but there was 1 week every summer where the guy and the girl counselors would be together and be trained. And I met her there. And then we used to go to the blast every winter together. And I'd really look forward to seeing Suzanne.
Yeah. He was a good friend. Always loved being in the groups at camp. Well, we can back up and tell a little bit about my history, but basically just being at camp at the blast was a blast, and it was just a lot of fun of laughing and being with fellow believers, and maybe not believers, but it was where I first met George at Camp Susqua. So we are married almost 35 years, coming up in June.
And the blast, it was like you'd have friends you were really looking forward to see, but there'd always be a new person or a few new people, and they would, you know, fit right in, and we just, they were part of the gang right away. It was the best part of the two best parts of the year were counselor orientation and then the blast. So
That has not changed. Those are my favorite times of the year as well, even though I am well outside of the age range to be an active participant in either, but still I really look forward to council orientation blast.
And it's funny, you know, sometimes churches have their singles ministry and whatnot, which seems like a contrived way to get people coupled up, but what better way to get to know someone than in a setting where you're, you know, you're focused on ministry, like at a Christian camp?
Yeah, there's definitely quality people with the same, like the same priorities that you have. And mm-hmm. Suzanne was talking about that the other day, right?
Well, yeah. So I think camp through a kind of like a generational lens, since my family has been coming up here. We've been involved in many different types of camps that Susqua holds. So my brothers went with the youth group. As a child, I was very afraid to go away. I didn't ever want to sleep over anyone's house. I didn't want to go to camp, sleep over camp. So, but I always knew about camp. And then, so as time went on and I got into the high school, I grew out of that stage, and I went to a camp, a Bible conference down at the Jersey Shore, and worked 1 year down there. And
you abandoned Susqua for a year is what you're saying? Okay.
Well, that was my first year away. And by the end of the summer, I really missed the green hills. And I live in North Jersey where it's lush and green. And I said to myself, I was really homesick for some, like the lush green trees and mountains. And I said, next year, I'm going to see if I can work at Camp Susqua. This was when I was in 11th grade. And then I did become a counselor. When I was 17.
And the other thing we were talking about is if you're in a small church, you know, there might not be, like, speaking of mingling, there might not be another quality person. Mm. So when you come to Camp Susqua, it's like you're collecting a bunch from a whole region.
Yeah.
To the point where we actually have to have, like, a significant session during orientation on this topic of fraternization. You know, we have to make sure that, like it is, like, it's a good thing, because we have, I mean, you guys are an example of this working out. This is job security for me and Dave, is that we want, it's great when we get wonderful people that meet here at Susqua and then provide us not only with campers, but then with future staff. And you guys have done that very well with four children that have come up through staff, which is impressive.
Yeah, and that's, for us, that's very proud moment that our kids are more well known than we are. Like, Suzanne was a counselor 5 summers. I was a counselor 5 summers. But we're known as, oh, you're the parents of Andrew or Christine or James or Claire.
Don't leave Claire as an
afterthought. No, definitely not an afterthought.
But I think that's, you know, we have like a number of, like, lots of multi-generational Susqua folks, but we have to, like, actually talk about that. But it is like what a place to meet someone. I mean, this is, we are all here for a united purpose. We have a commonality in Christ. We also have wonderful boundaries built into the schedule and how we do things. So it's like, I never want to market ourselves as this is a place to meet someone. But boy, we've created some pretty cool relationships here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, there is both, like, opportunity and accountability built in.
Sure.
I did not meet my wife here. It was at Blast that she decided, maybe I do like this guy.
Wow.
There's something about that.
So you invited her to a Blast?
I don't know. I mean, it was probably me, but she had a number of other friends that through college that were Susqua folks.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, she ended up at a couple of Blasts, actually.
Going back to, coming to camp, at that age, I was in a small church plant and going to public high school, and I come from a church background. And it was at that time, of course, in everybody's life, well, at least mine, that I felt the pull of the world. I didn't have a lot of support as far as fellowship in my church. And so I think camp at that point was God's faithfulness to me, because it was just provided. Like, I came to the blast. I was surrounded by very godly people. They, you know, camp chooses their staff very wisely. And it was such an encouragement to my faith to continue following the Lord. So when I would go home, and that's why there were always these big sad goodbyes in the parking lots, you know, everybody hugging each other after the summer ending. Mm-hmm. And just really sad for me to be going back where I knew I would be doing spiritual battle, being lonely, but having the encouragement of seeing that there were other godly people going back to their lives, like college or back into high schools or whatever age that is. But with the encouragement that, hey, there are other believers and they are wonderful people. You get to know people here at camp. If you're on the staff, it's such an encouragement, and you're able to carry on. I was able to have hope that, and be strengthened through the encouragement of fellow believers.
Well, I think there's a great analogy to be made there too, with like languages. Like, you can learn a language from textbooks and from classes in high school and middle school and all that. Now, I did 4 years of German class, and you can learn some basics of it, but you can't become fluent that way. You're not going to become comfortable with it. It's never going to become second nature for you until you immerse yourself in it. Until you, like, I never went to Germany, so I speak no German now. I can't even think of a throwaway phrase to use right now. But if you go to Germany and you speak German over a period of time, you're going to become much more familiar with it. You're going to actually become fluent. And that's that immersion, that's how we learn languages. That's the best way to learn it. And I feel like that's the Christian life too. Like, when you can definitely learn Christianity on your own, from books and from the Bible and from prayer and these spiritual disciplines. But immersing yourself in a Christian community, that's where it becomes second nature and part of you and quickly. And I think that's one of the benefits of working here during the summer. Is this is how you become accustomed to Christian living, Christian life.
Yeah. Like, some people who come to camp have different backgrounds. So my background was churched. So when I came here, it was like everything I had been learning as I grew up, it was my opportunity to put into practice what I had been learning. But I didn't know how to do that. And camp was just a wonderful place because I was away from my parents. I was away from different structures. And it was a place where, hey, I've been hearing that I should be ministering to others. I've heard that I need to be loving others so that they can come to know Christ. And it was kind of like learning to walk almost in my Christian faith. Like, oh, I have to put this this is a place where I can minister. This is how you do it. And as a young person, like 17, 18, 19, 20, you're learning this. And that's why I like camp so much, because I think it gives Christian young people a wonderful place to learn how to do that. And, you know, you're so gracious. The staff is so gracious. Of course, people are going to make mistakes. You're not going to do things well when you're learning to walk. You might trip. You might fall.
but this is a wonderful, gracious place to, as a young person, to come learn how to put your faith into practice and all those things like telling others about Christ. Maybe you have gifts of service more, like for the kitchen, and you learn to do those for the Lord. And it's just a wonderful place to serve, grow in your maturity.
My own personal testimonial, or at least one part of it, I came here as, well, I'm the youngest of three, and I had never had experience really leading anything. I was the president of the marching band, but that held one responsibility, and that was to give a speech at the banquet. And it's just like being, you know, the most popular band geek. That's not very impressive. So when I came here and you're responsible for children and sharing the gospel with them, I remember a few years later when I was teaching, because I taught music for a while before I was full-time here, I thought back more often on what would I do if I were this student's counselor than like, well, what did my professors tell me? And my professors were fine. I had a lot of great professors, but it's that, again, that difference between immersion in an environment where you're actually practicing those incredibly valuable soft skills, we sometimes say, and, you know, just learning the theory of it. But that has been whatever modicum of leadership ability I have now is in large part probably due to Sesqua.
George, I have a question for you back to Chill and chaplaining. This is your second time at the Chill. If I'm not mistaken, 2016 were you Chill, or is it 2015 you were Chill chaplain? No, 2016, I believe.
I'm not sure, but it was about the Book of Daniel.
Yeah, about the... Yeah. So two different times as Chill chaplain. Can you kind of compare and contrast what these experiences have been like?
So the first time, I think you told me that the kids might not know the Bible, so just tell them what happened in the Book of Daniel.
We kind of like going with a narrative and a story instead of, because it's also a short weekend, right?
And then this time it seemed more like Genesis 1:1, John 3:16, like really present the gospel to them. So that was one big change.
So have you done that this weekend? Can you walk us through your sessions a little
bit? Sure. So the first one was on creation and just like how could anything go wrong? God provided a perfect universe and put us in to learn about it and to have dominion over it. So it seems like, you know, that would be the end of the story. And then the second one was...
Everybody lived happily ever after.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. This is good.
So that
we don't need to read beyond Genesis 2. That's our Bible.
But something bad happened. Sin happened. And so the next one was about Exodus chapter 33, when God said that they could have everything that they wanted. They could have this land flowing with milk and honey. And angels were going to kick out all the nations that were there, so they wouldn't have to fight with them. But the only thing is they couldn't have God. God wasn't going to go with them. And then, so that was like, have you ever had a toy? And then the person who gave it to you, you could never see them again. Things like that. Just why was this a disastrous word? Like you might think if you got everything you wanted, you'd be totally happy. And if you could be your own boss, you'd be even happier than that. But the Israelites thought it was a disastrous word. And that was a very good sign. It means that in our heart of hearts, we know we want to be with God. And sometimes things get in the way. And there was nothing that humans could do to save the situation. We were at an impasse. And so it was kind of like we were hanging off a cliff right there. There's nothing. It looked like there's no way out of this disaster. And then the third one was Jesus. God sent his only son as the way out of this situation. God couldn't be near us because he's so holy. And then he sent his son to provide a way for us to be with him. And then the last one was just about, you got the worst guy ever, and he turns good in the end. And that was Paul. He was ravaging the church, and God changed him. And if God can change him, God can change me. And that was the last talk. Oh, and the other fun thing were the staff prayers. I don't remember that during the last time I was chaplain.
I think back then we didn't have the chaplain's lead staff prayer.
That's okay.
It's just one other way I've been, let's say, delegating, not shirking. Like we've been passing more.
Dumping off your responsibilities on others.
Yeah, it used to be the director did all the staff prayers during winter camps. We're like, wait, we're bringing in these wonderful chaplains. Why is the director doing the same devotions that the staff have heard 10 times?
So the first one for that was Jonah as the master evangelist. And you think God used Jonah. He was kicking and screaming against it, but God could use him in spite of Jonah.
And 120,000 people repented.
Yeah, that's the record for the whole Bible. Yeah. So,
despite Jonah, like, just absolutely, like, this is a bad idea. I don't want to do this.
So he's like the anti-evangelist, and God could use him, or God could work in spite of him. So if God could work in spite of him, God can work with us when we're cooperating with God to evangelize our campers.
That was a good one, too, because you framed it with a list of how this great evangelist, you know, bathed his ministry in prayer. As soon as God spoke, he responded. And then at the end, the plot twist ending was, this was Jonah.
Responded by running away.
Right.
He prayed that he would die. And he would, it was great.
That was the theme of the show, was a weekend in the theater. So all the talks were, it was kind of corny, but all the talks were various genres of plays or TV shows.
Right. We don't do corny at camps.
So. Oh, no, we don't do corny.
It's campy, actually.
Not campy.
Not even the skits last night.
Oh, no.
I don't think they rose to the level of corny. You have to have a certain level of cohesiveness in order to be considered corny. Yeah,
that's true.
And I think the last time I was at Chill, was I mainly a science person? And I did chapel talks, too?
Well, I definitely did science stuff and chapel talks.
Yeah, and this year, like the science, I did two science shows, but they were mainly an afterthought. And I had even forgot, you need to set up a science show. You don't just do a science show. So that's how far down the ladder it was in terms of priorities for me.
So that being said, might be a good segue for us to talk about any of our listeners who may not be familiar with you. What are these science shows? What's your background in science?
So
you bring to Sesame.
Your tax dollars at work I have amazing things. The air that we breathe is made out of mainly nitrogen, oxygen, and argon. So I have gas cylinders.
And Suzanne has just fallen asleep. Just for listeners to know. She's heard this 1,000 times.
And Chief Peter will get some liquid nitrogen for us. And you can actually liquefy or solidify the other gases. And it's amazing things that you don't see in our day-to-day life because we're so hot compared to these when liquid nitrogen is minus 320. So there's a lot of very interesting things you can do. Like oxygen is a baby blue color when you liquefy it. Oxygen sticks to a magnet, and you can see that when it's a liquid. Argon, it's a noble gas, so you wouldn't expect it to react, but it can liquefy. The different argon atoms can attract each other if you remove enough heat, enough other energy, and they can even solidify. So you can see a chunk of solid argon. So it's just like perhaps we have high temperature superconductors and how they repel all magnetic fields, and they don't just repel the magnetic fields. There's they trap the magnetic flux lines if you have quantum mechanics. So we don't teach quantum mechanics in the show, but we just show how amazing God's universe is. And maybe for us, we're not used to it, but maybe out in space, it's even colder than that. So these things might happen.
Well, I think a sign of success of the shows is yesterday at the end of the first show, as we were rotating campers to go from sitting in rows watching the science demonstration to going outside in the snow where there are sleds, running around, all kinds of games and excitement. I heard repeatedly among some of the campers is, no, I don't want to go. I want to learn more science. So that was that's an encouragement that was a hit for sure.
Yeah, and this show it's nationally recognized, and I was a plenary speaker at a science conference 3 times talking about these shows.
So you were a science speaker for the Army, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
So how did you get into that line of work?
I came from a family that always loved science, and my younger sister was a science teacher, and she showed me some of the tricks from here. She's always sending me different ways. She's a science teacher still, and there's creation, there's God working. We have His word, but we also have nature, and part of what He told Adam and Eve was to have dominion over the earth, figure out, like, it's almost like He's a treasure for us and we have to find it, and different parts of His creation we're still finding out more and more about this amazing God that created these things. There's plenty of scientists who are Christians.
I don't, like, far be it for me to ever recommend another podcast on this podcast, but there's a sermon by John Piper that a chunk of it has been on, I can't remember the podcast, so I can't even recommend
that
it.
That Light Plus Truth, or
Truth. Light and Truth podcast, yeah. I think it's the first episode, actually, of the Light and
Truth. So Siri called it Light Plus Truth when I searched for it.
But there's a sermon by John Piper, a part of a sermon, where he talks about how we don't get it, just how big God is, until, like, unless you get this like baseline understanding of science, like, it's hard for us to even comprehend how just amazing God is as creator. And he talked about how, like, you know, you have these scientists, like Einstein would walk into a church and say, these pastors they're not preaching who God is, because they're not even talking about this amazing thing. And Piper gets pretty excited about it. It really strikes me as, like, that's one of the amazing things about coming to camp, is we have all these resources to show that, like, the more you learn about God's creation, the more amazing the creator is. Mm. And we can just walk around not knowing that air is made up of all these different gases that do all these cool things in these different environments. Now, this is all not just ordered from the beginning of time, because, like, now, I mean, part of it is, like, if there is a great watchmaker that just wound it all up, that's incredible. That would be spectacular. If God just started all this and let it go, and this is all still working and functioning this way, that is amazing. How could you not be amazed and praise it? But our God's even bigger than that. He's holding it together with His word at this moment, like, everything. And like, the deeper you understand, like, the forces that are working between atoms and or within an atom to hold an atom together, and how much energy is in there and everything like that. And that's happening at God's command this very moment. Mm. And that's an amazing thing. And, like, that opens God up to just being so much bigger and more amazing. And that's what we want to show kids. I think that's what's a great thing about your science show, is it's like kind of a peek behind the curtain. And this is what the created world is like. That's really neat.
And there's people who say, you know, what are we going to do in heaven? It would be so boring. How could it go on forever? And this is kind of maybe a glimpse of how we could keep finding things out. That's how big God is, that we'd enjoy Him for eternity.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a chemistry professor from Mansfield share for a breakout session at our blast last week, and he talked about just isolating one compound out of a group of compounds and how he got this spreadsheet of numbers back from the lab that he sent it to and put it in a program, and he could see it like 3D. But he commented on how when he was looking at it, it was like you're totally immersed in what you're doing and just amazed at, and that was just one compound out of, you know, however many billions there are. I don't even know if that's accurate, but the idea that we can spend eternity studying the works of God, it sounds very appealing.
Yeah, and if you don't like to study, you could just say playing with.
Well, yeah there you
As
go.
As George does.
I wanted to talk a little bit about like some of the impact. You said you thought back to what would a counselor do with his kids. There's for years and years, 1982 was my first year as a counselor, and I remember Chief Bob Dittmar talking to us, and each opening ceremony of camp, he would tell us things, and one was, you should join in. If there's an activity, if the counselor is not telling you to sin, you should try to join in every activity. Even if it's not, maybe you don't think it'll be your favorite. It might become your favorite. And that's something that I've always thought of. It doesn't always have to be what I think would be the most fun. That's what I'm going to do now. It's join in, be a team player, make the time fun for the other people if they really like it. Another thing he mentioned was that we were in these cabin groups. There were seven campers. And he would say, how many of you have six brothers? And I guess nowadays some homeschool families might, but back then no one had six brothers. So it was another thing. This is different than your home life, and use it as a chance to really see the benefits of being around all these people. Don't just think of the bad things, like you have to share an outhouse or things like that. Think of the good things of it and use it for that.
RIP outhouses.
And then another thing I wanted to mention, we talked about the great ways you can work out your faith, but it was also a great way for me to learn how to do a chore. Growing up, I didn't help at all. And then you come to camp, you learn how to sweep, you learn how to clean the bathroom, you learn how to do dishes. I remember Mrs. Dittmar, Chief Bob's wife, telling me, you might be an engineer, but you know nothing about, I put a mop bucket in the kitchen sink, and she was horrified, and she let me know that she was horrified. So just a lot of practical skills I learned as a counselor or on the work crew.
Yeah, I think about, all my children are adults now, but as I became a mom, I just hearkened back to my counseling days, because it was endless. It, to me, as a teenager, it was like 24/7. Oh, this is like, I'm so tired, you know, like, but it was encouraging to look back, because I said, I did this before. I did this as a counselor. It just, you know, and so it wasn't such a shock to become a parent, because I know what that is.
So what was that journey like? You both worked at camp, met at camp, and then eventually you started having your own children, and you got to bring them into the Susquehanna community, and now all four of them have been on staff. So what were some of the biggest moments where you felt rewarded, or the greatest blessings of being a camp parent as well as a camp staffer?
Well, back when I was kind of hinting at, like, this is a generational thing for me, because my family came to family camp when I was in junior high, and we never stopped until I went to college. So that's part of it. And then I became on staff. And so I kind of knew the benefits of being on staff and how I grew. So I said, I really want that for my kids too. Like I said, not only that, so when I started bringing the kids to camp to leave them here, I would go up to a tent and their counselor would be another, a child or somebody I had known, like a parent of the, you know, it was such a comforting thing. Oh, I know I was a counselor with, mm-hmm. you know, and so it was such a comforting thing to leave your child with these God, you know, how the children of these families were raised. So that was one thing that I really loved.
And my first time bringing our oldest son, Andrew, here, he was we called it adventure camp back then, but he was a young explorer camp. And he was going to be in my tent with me. And then another counselor for that age group was Dan Barrett. And Dan Barrett, Ken Mick, and I were the Littleman counselors in 1982 together. So I just thought it was so amazing that Dan Barrett could be my son's counselor at this young explorer camp.
Wait, Scott Barrett?
No, his dad.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's cool. That's
really neat. It was so cool. And we homeschooled, so to have Andrew was going to be in my tent, but I asked if he could move over to
Dan Barrett's,
because you know I was right there in the next tent, but it was a chance for him to be with some other grown up and other kids.
And then we started coming to the homeschool family camp that is no longer, but we really benefited from that during our days raising our kids. It was a wonderful group of people that came every year, and it was very supportive of what we were doing with the homeschooling. And so as they grew and they became on staff, it was nice to know that they were in a good environment where they were going to be learning to walk and minister and use those skills that they had been learning their whole life. And here's a place to do it, a wonderful place to be on their own, be independent, of course, supervised, but yet learning to become a young adult on their own. And that is it's just such a wonderful, faithful thing God did to provide camp.
So when you think of our kids, are you thinking of them as staff or as campers? Because I think of Susco for my kids, I usually think of them as on staff. Mm. And that just shows how much you can grow and learn as a staff person. That's what I think of when I think of my kids. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they say sometimes you never grow up to your parents. Like, you're always a little kid to your parents. But you're saying when you think of your kids, you can see them serving on staff in these roles of responsibility.
Yeah, that's all I think. I don't remember anything of them being camper. Like, maybe a little, but it's mainly how they were serving and growing.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I have... Well,
and I had your children as campers too. At least I had Andrew as a camper. In fact, this is the creepiness of technology. A couple of years ago, like a picture, like Susqua posted a picture, like of a
throwback.
Throwback picture. Yeah. And it was my cabin group with a number of kids from your church, including Andrew. And Facebook recognized and recommended tagging them all.
Wow.
And they, like, in the picture, they were like 11. And yet, like, the technology out there was, like, good enough to, like, get recognized, like, you know, Andrew Fisher and.
We can't say the other names.
I probably shouldn't say the other names, but mostly, you know, his cohort from those years. But yeah, it was weird, but kind of neat.
That was wild. I am about the age of your children, or some of them, and so when I came to Susqua as a totally new person, I feel like there's always been one of your children on staff over the last, I don't know, 12 summers and now winters, which is great. Thankful you brought Claire back. She's a lot of fun for the kids.
Yeah.
Where else should we take this? Any other Susqua stories that you have?
Hundreds of Susqua stories. But one thing I wanted to say was, it's so satisfying to be like an old person and able to help. So even if you're listening and you're a counselor or on staff, it doesn't have to stop when you get a quote unquote real job. You can come back on your vacation or help out in different ways.
Yeah, it's also like, or you can come be a guest on the Susquadcast and share all of your Susqua stories.
Yeah, that's right. Just email dave@susqua.org or david@susqua.org also goes to me. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. Do you want to tell a story?
Yeah, I'm interested. You guys have tons of stories from your time here. Like, what when people ask you, like, what happened at Susqua? What did you do at Susqua? Like, what are some things that come to mind that...
One thing, like, this is a different era back then. So one thing I
that's
remember...
That's a good... I like when there's a caveat of, like, now this was the 80s, so this isn't how we do things now.
So there was one meal, and for some reason, the campers didn't really like the thing. So I was at one table, another counselor was at a different table, and we scraped all the food onto this one platter, and I ate all the ones from my table, and he ate all the ones from his table.
Yeah. So. We don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
No, save it for the kitchen in second.
Yeah, yeah. there is, I've heard rumors. I don't know if this is true. I'm going to leave this as potentially not true, that a challenge, like not hazing, because this is a challenge by choice, that some of the support staff that ensued was like to take a bite of the dishwasher collection. And this is like the most horrified and disgusting. Now, sanitary, it's been sanitized.
Wait, it's been through the dishwasher?
It's been like, and it what collects in the trap? But I'm like, that's when I was on staff, that's definitely something we would have done. Like, that would have been a big
We had an industrial dishwasher when I was on staff, but I don't think we ever thought of doing
it. Yeah, I don't remember doing that, but I have heard that that's like a... not a rite of passage, more just a challenge, but might also be a way to, like, if we are struggling with some of the, we discussed earlier fraternization and how this is a wonderful place to meet someone and all that. I would feel like if we're struggling, we think maybe that's going a little too far during a summer, we'll institute that challenge and then just make people repulsive to each other. That'll work out great.
I heard that they call it third shift.
Third shift, yes. Second shift is the after the meal, the leftovers, the kitchen staff.
And the
third
host.
Shift is, that's awful. Mm-hmm. George and Susanna are now rethinking their love and support of Susqua after that.
There's just so many traditions and so many, you know, you think of the Susqua goodbyes. Do you still do those?
Oh, yeah. And yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You, you know, just all the songs and, so yeah, it's just it feels like for me, like, you know, my parents, you grow up in the house, and then they moved, and then I moved around the country, but every time you come back to Susqua, it's like the same warm family kind of. It's the same traditions. It's it feels like home. And so it's just a special place that the Lord has provided. It's such a blessing. It's been such a blessing to our lives and to my life in so many different facets. It's not only spiritually, but just providing a place to grow and learn. And it's a wonderful ministry camp.
So you referenced Susqua goodbyes.
Yes.
So I've got two questions. First of all, for those that don't know what a Susqua goodbye is, could you describe it? And then the follow-up questions. Any memorable ones that you recall that you could share?
Yes, I was trying to avoid that.
And you brought it up. I'm just curious.
But anyway, so yes, a Susqua goodbye, I believe, you could probably tell it better, Peter, but... So it's when maybe we were all leaving for the summer after working together as counselors and on staff, where you would gather buckets of water. Some people would actually climb the iron bridge and dump water on the cars as they went under the bridge. But most of us would be on the road, and you take your bucket and you just splash, pour the bucket onto cars. And it would be...
That's an apt description. I think that's
And that's...
Yeah. But here comes the story.
Yeah.
Here comes
well,
the story.
Well, I'm going to leave this in a very...
Generic.
I'm not going to name
no,
names.
No, name names. This is,
no
this
names.
Is,
but...
We want to respect the dead.
Trying to stick with a fun Susquehanna goodbye, somehow we had the idea, a group of us, no names... had the idea that we would give a Susquehanna goodbye in the dark after a evening service of camp, at family camp. And so it was dark, and we were trying to hit a friend group.
Oh, no.
And we were teenagers, and we had buckets of water, and it was dark. And who knew?
It was the summer, right?
Just making excuses after excuses.
were windows open?
It was the summer, and the windows were open because air condition wasn't so common back then. And we hit the wrong car.
Oh,
yeah. The windows were open, and all this water came into a car of a very, maybe like older official type of
very dignified gentleman.
Dignified yes. Gentleman and his wife. And
were they at least coming from camp?
That would be called a disaster.
They were coming from camp. Okay, good.
Yeah. It was a disaster because they had never heard of a Susquehanna goodbye. So I had a lot of explaining to do, and like, even though it was dark, you could probably see my face being very red. So
was there any long did they ever come back to camp?
Yes,
okay,
they did come back to camp.
Is this wow. I don't want to name Stabe and Marg Hackenberg.
No, they would love a joke
they
like
were
that.
Part,
yeah.
They just could not.
Because I heard a story
once
about
they
them
heard
getting
the story,
splashed like this.
They were here.
Okay.
Stabe and Marg were here. And one of their daughters told them what had happened.
Oh,
and
no.
They Stave could not stop laughing.
Oh my goodness.
He was
yeah.
just cracking up.
Okay. I knew there was a connection with them because I think I've heard this story, maybe even from them. I don't
oh,
know.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to mention thinking on the other side of parting and greeting. When you mentioned earlier coming back to Susquehanna and seeing so many people that you love and the community here. I think one of the neatest things about working in the office in May and June as pre-camp starts, you can hear from the parking lot the staff that are cheering and yelling in excitement when they see their friend pull in because they're here for the summer. And even shrieking is an apt description of it. Or to an extent for winter camps too, on the Friday when they arrive. And I just feel like it's a, you know, a little foretaste of glory, right? When we all get to rejoice in seeing and knowing the loved ones that have gone before us.
George, we got a story out of Suzanne.
Yeah, I was thinking, do I even have a story? I was just a model counselor.
I have, there are always, everybody has their, basically their reputations and so forth. And George, the reputation that precedes you is that as a counselor, you never had a bad camper.
That's true, yeah.
I think
I have a story.
Okay.
So even to this very day, I sometimes don't like a lot of noise. So there was one week, and we just had so many campers, and the dining hall, especially at lunch, was just a racket. Mm. And that summer, you could ask the kitchen to prepare a box for you, and then you could take your kids to somewhere else. And I think I probably did that a little too much. Mm. because they started calling it Camp George, like what I would do with my group. And it wasn't a compliment. It was, I guess I was making trouble for the kitchen, and it was kind of being apart from the rest of the gang. So,
well, though that influence has altered how we do things at Young Explorers Camp a little bit. Mm-hmm. As a Young Explorers counselor, at one point, Davis was the program director, I think, at the time, and he noticed that you know, before announcements, everything, you took your group and got up and left. And I think Davis's instinct was to be a little like, well, you can't do that. But then Davis was like, actually, that's way better than everybody sitting around in a hot, loud dining hall trying to listen to announcements that really only affect a few people. And like, so now that's kind of like what we do for Young Explorers Camp is like, hey, when you guys are done, take your group and go. You know what to do. And it's actually been a really, I think, a positive change for lunches at Young Explorers Camp. Wow. Is that it's kind of up to, so you're... Maybe that wasn't a positive at the time with Camp George, but it has turned into a good thing and affected our schedule in a good way.
Mm-hmm. One other story. We had a camper named Drew Sealing, and he's from the farm next door. And his dad made him this really nice tree fort. Mm. And I think we slept out in that tree fort one night.
Three-story tree fort.
Yes. Yeah. And that's something I always remember.
Yeah,
but like we said before, if you never have any bad campers, you don't have any stories, really.
It
was fun, but there's not much to say about it.
And I think it's great that you never had any bad campers, but I think also what that says is that, you know, I don't know much about statistics. I don't know much about camper dynamics and how your cabin groups are chosen. But, like, I think that speaks to the quality of the counselor. If you didn't have bad campers, that like there's a like having order instruction and all these things that really like that affects the group of campers and really leads to, and also your attitude about it, like probably, you know, if someone else had those same campers, they might identify several bad campers.
Yeah.
But that love for your campers, of course you don't have bad campers. You have wonderful campers. Even the ones that
they all
are really
potential.
They're all made in God's image. They're all image bearers. And even the ones that try your patience the most are leading you to grow in patience.
Right.
So there's,
I want to say one thing. When we first, Suzanne was a Young Explorer counselor, and I was also, back when it was Adventure Camp. And then some younger friends of ours at church were thinking of being counselors. And we said, oh, yeah, it's going to be like a vacation for you. And we were serious. We had four little kids, and like to get a half an hour of free time, that was amazing. So we told them that they were going to have a vacation, and then they came back and they said, George, were you joking us?
We weren't, because we didn't ever have like any, we were homeschooling, so it was 24/7. Mm. So when we get an hour off, that was like, What?
Yeah.
So we're like, this is great.
That's why I love Young Explorers, bringing in seasoned counselors that are usually parents of many of the campers, because they've got that parent's perspective. Like, this isn't anything out of the ordinary.
Yes.
They have the bigger picture, too. And I think, like, you've seen it all. And I think some of our 18 to 22-year-old counselors, that even though they've just gone through a very intensive time of training where we've taught them everything we possibly think of, they're kind of shell-shocked. Mm-hmm. And like, no matter how well you train someone on, again, this kind of is the immersive thing, like until you experience it, it's hard. Like until you experience it, a child waking up in the middle of the night because they've wet their bed, you don't really know what to do with that. But the parents that come and help us with Younger Sports Camp, they've done this 200 times. This is not that big of a deal. We can handle this. But for the 18-year-old encountering this for the first time ever, this is like a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking to that, I remember, I think it was my first year as a counselor, one of my campers came up to me and said, Chief George, I have a loose tooth. I said, oh no, did somebody punch you in the mouth? He said, no, I've had like three other loose teeth. I had forgotten about baby teeth.
Right. So. Yeah. That's funny.
That's great. All right, well, as listeners to this Squadcast, you will recall that we like to conclude each episode with some thankfuls. So with all the thankful rules in mind, Chief George, what are you thankful for today?
I am thankful for the year-round staff. And the reason why is, like, this is such a special place for us. And you might not realize how much people appreciate what you do and think about what you do and are thankful for how you're investing your lives.
He's just pandering so we get to be on another episode of the Sasquatch.
Yeah.
Thank you, George.
And that's for today. I'm thankful for you being on this year-round staff today.
Yeah. Smart. Good qualification.
Well, if I could interject, I did want to say I appreciated you. We were talking yesterday off the air about how much you have listened to the Sasquatcast, and that's encouraging because as the producer, you just kind of put it out into the ether, and podcasts don't usually get like the comments or the social engagement that maybe a social media post would get, and so it's just kind of out there, and you're like, I hope people are enjoying it. So to hear that you said you listened to many of them multiple times, so that's really neat.
What I'm thankful, I could name quite a few things,
but you're not allowed to.
I'm not allowed to. That's an ordinance. So, let's see. I will have to just be very basic, childlike wonder and awe, the snow, because it hasn't really snowed. I know that you didn't have snow for the blast and the freeze, and now for this age group, very appropriate. The Lord provides it. It's made camp very fun for the kids.
I'm thankful for the moments I get to hang out with my kids during a program, and it can be very busy during a winter camp, but also not every dad gets to see his family at work, like while he's working. And so I was holding Erebus and she was asking to dance during your chapel, so you'll forgive me, I didn't end up catching very much of it this morning, but it was really cute, so appreciate that.
I was going to say the snow, but Susanna stole it. So
you did let us go first.
Yeah, that's all right. I think I'm thankful and specifically today, but also in general. Usually, I really love staff prayer in the morning. It's kind of bad to start your day with the highlight of your day because then everything else is downhill. But I really enjoy starting the day with the staff where we get to hear from God's word briefly. We get to pray together. We get to we do our thankfuls anarchy in the morning, and then we sing together. And that's kind of like how we go out in the world in the day. And I really really enjoy, especially during winter camps, where we're in front of the fire. And today getting sports metaphors or sports analogies as a part of it from Chief George is even better, because that's like sports analogies are my love language. I'm thankful for staff prayer.
George and Suzanne, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
For more information about Camp Susqua, be sure to visit our website at susqua.org.